Welcome to Myopia Movies. Under the original premise of the show, we saw how movies held up and people defended them. Well, this is a movie I remember seeing and having my mind absolutely blown. But in this episode, I will talk about how disappointed I was in the sequel. I didn't come to the show till later, until it was actually almost over, and then I kind of watched it like over and over and over again, all the way through, probably twice, in individual episodes at least a dozen times. The movie, I thought, for the first movie at least, was perfect. And then when they announced years later that they were making a second movie, me and my friend Mark went and were utterly disappointed. It was my wife's first introduction to the show, and I think it killed her on the show for a long time. But this first movie is delightful. It is intense. It has an element of All the President's Men. And so next week, when we do the sequel, I want you to think about how great this movie is and how far it fell. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Steve, you okay?
I got the wind knocked out of me.
What's down there, Stevie? Anything?
It's a human skull!
There are forces on Earth.
Toss it up here, dude!
No way, but life is mine!
Too hidden to be detected. There are conspiracies too vast.
Hey, Stevie!
To be uncovered.
You okay?
Hey, man, let's get out of here.
But on June 19th, the truth is coming.
Scully?
Run!
We have a situation.
I need you on this.
One man alone cannot fight the future.
It has mutated.
Into what? Trust no one, Mr. Mulder.
The truth is something you never guess, never have predicted.
If this were some tavern tale, all half-truth and senseless adventure,
and it's full of demons.
And it's full of demons.
'Twas disastrous.
It's coming, people. It's coming.
Pitchforks, get your pitchforks here. Can't kill a demon without your pitchforks.
Torches and pitchforks. No defense. You better defend yourself.
No matter how you spend your life, your wit will defend you more often than a sword. Keep it sharp. Have I got some shit to tell you?
I gotta practice my killing.
Let the wicked hear my voice and tremble.
Fly, you fool. Fly.
You have to pick a side. You stay on your path, or you cross over to me.
I wanted to get inside so badly I could taste it.
Upon him I will visit famine and a fire, till all around him desolation rings, and all the demons in the outer dark look on amazed and recognize that vengeance is the business of a man. Caster Quest, now on the ESO Network.
ESO, ESO. Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. This week, we watched X-Files Fight the Future, a movie that shows that no matter how paranoid you are, conspiracy theorists still believe in vaccines, Jenny McCarthy.
I'm Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief of Dude Letter and host of Myopia Defended Childhood. There isn't a defend this week. We're doing it because the show is being re-released this very week. However, we do have a panel, and on panel this week is...
Hello, this is Daniel, and I was the gunman on the grassy knoll.
And...
Jeremy, and I plead the fifth.
And...
Matthew W. Quinn, representing MJ12.
Excellent. We all got to make references. I'm happy about that. Overall, we'll just go quickly. Initial thoughts. Did you guys enjoy this movie? I know. Well, actually, first thoughts. Were you guys a fan of this show beforehand?
Well, actually, growing up, I was never allowed to watch this show because it came on at 9 p.m. Sunday before school night, and I had to be at bed at 8:30. So I was stuck watching the commercials during The Simpsons and wondering what I was missing.
Yeah, for a while, I wasn't allowed to watch The X-Files, and my parents considered it was too scary. Then eventually it turned into a reward for getting good grades in math. And then... Well, I remember that's fine. At the time the movie came out, I was allowed to watch it all the time.
I do remember this one like TV ad, and I'm pretty sure it was for that Home episode that aired the same night as a Treehouse of Horror from The Simpsons. And they're like, okay, now put the kiddies to bed because this next show is for adults only.
Yeah.
Anyone else remember that? Or is
well,
just
no,
me?
Well, we can get to Jeremy here. I mean, otherwise we're going to keep interrupting him, which is kind of our want on this show. But I don't necessarily remember it for that episode, but I remember a lot of ads like that. And I remember Home in particular being particularly rough, and rewatching it for the upcoming series. That episode is still very rough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was a kid, I was introduced to the show at a buddy of mine's house. You know, he was having a party or something on a day we had a school holiday. And... you know, I kind of watched it with them. I didn't really care about this stuff. I got really into the show in college, though, and rewatched the whole series end to end. So I watched The Simpsons where Dana, Scully, and Fox Mulder show up because Homer saw the alien far before I got all the jokes about it.
Was that the one where Mo had stolen a whale from SeaWorld?
Yes, it is. Which, after seeing Blackfish, still might have been better than remaining at SeaWorld. What about you, Jeremy? Do you have a history with this?
I'm not sure why I didn't watch it that often. I only saw a handful of episodes, but thankfully I saw enough to get a lot of the references in the movie. I knew who the lone gunman were. I knew who the cigarette-smoking man was. But yeah, I mean, the episodes I did see were really good. I remember there was one where a guy would put people into a trance by going, Cerulean Blue, Cerulean Blue.
That's a great episode.
Yeah.
You know, and thinking about the show, especially on rewatching, it's amazing how many tropes come out of it that still exist in TV shows today. You know, things like 9/11 really screw with the show, obviously. It's hard to not trust the government after 9/11.
Well, that's the biggest challenge I've got, though, with the X-Files, is partly because in the post-9/11 world, I mean, the whole show was built around, even though it was canceled after 9/11, it was about conspiracy theories and how they could be taken seriously at a time where, you know, in the 90s where... nothing really was happening. But then after 9/11, all those internet forum people like the Lone Gunman sort of took over and just made the whole idea of a conspiracy theory a joke. So I'm wondering if audiences that didn't grow up with the X-Files are going to treat it like camp. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I think now it makes sense that, at least from the trailers, you know, we're recording this before the show's been, you know, restarted. It looks like the whole villain is the NSA. I mean, it makes sense. The idea of this omnipresent, always watching kind of government. You know, the idea in the 90s that, I mean, this is oddly placed here, but that a group like the Drudge Report can bring down a president almost, right? That,
right?
That there's information always available, that conspiracy isn't crazy. You know, it's kind of fun, like you said, and then 9/11 happens and that changes. But this movie starts with a cold open. Well, actually, the cold open is some Neanderthals being mauled by an alien. And then we cut to Oklahoma City bombing, which is weird.
Well, Die Hard 3 crossed with the Oklahoma City bombing.
My God. It's not filled with soda pop. Dun, dun, dun. Doodle-doodle-doodle. Crack out the theremin. Before we get too far, would someone like to give us a plot synopsis?
I'll do it, as is tradition. First, I think I can do this by just reading off a Cards Against Humanity card and going... bees?
Not the bees.
Oh. We went there already. So essentially, there's some extraterrestrial virus that's infecting human beings and causing aliens to gestate in them, kind of like the xenomorphs in Aliens. But actually, there really isn't much difference. But anyway, there's a group that's trying to prevent them or help them or do something with them to make sure that the general population doesn't know about them. A few get infected, so they use the Oklahoma City bombing thing to cover it up. But Fox Mulder and Dana Scully find out about it, and they go on a trip to Dallas and all the way to Antarctica to try and unravel the mystery of this mysterious alien virus.
I mean, yeah. Is blowing up a building the most protracted way to hide a little bit of evidence?
According to Alex Jones, yes.
Especially since they end up carrying at least some of the bodies from Dallas to Washington, D.C. I mean, the problem with conspiracies is the more links you have in the chain, the more likely something to get broken. Somebody's going to see something.
That's the sort of thing that I was talking about earlier. I mean, after 9/11, we really saw, the most sinister things were really overt, or at least became overt rather quickly, and B, the ones that were trying to be covert, like, you know, the whole 9/11 is a false flag or whatever, and all that crap, it just seems so bizarrely funny.
Well, going back to Die Hard 3, they blow up a subway so they could get to the safe with all the gold.
I would expect nothing less from Jeremy Irons. Yeah.
Well, he is scarred.
Be prepared.
I just...
Were you a Boy Scout or something there, Matt?
And a musical number as well. I want to give this movie some credit off the bat. First of all, I think it does a good job of introducing people to characters if they don't know the movie.
Well, I actually did see this in theaters when I was a kid. I don't know how I ended up in the theater, but I do remember all the scenes. And looking back on it now, that introduction with Scully and Mulder, even if you didn't know them, it still establishes exactly who they are in that minute of dialogue. It's great.
Well,
and then you have the expository drunken rant in the bar. I'm like, hey, I'm Spooky Mulder. My sister got abducted by aliens.
Hey, any excuse to put Glenn Headley in a movie works for me.
Well, and, you know, I mean, it is a drunken thing and it's almost trite, but I mean, I believe him. He's a good actor, you know, and it's so funny because we end up with, I almost said Walter Matthau. It's wrong. It's Martin Landau. And some other... You know, I said almost said actual actors, but these are, for the most part, TV actors who this is really all they did. I mean,
Martin Landau won an Oscar that
one. No, I said other than him.
Okay.
You know, but like, it's not like Dana Scully has a huge resume now. It's not like David Duchovny has done much other than deal with sex addiction.
I guess that movie Evolution doesn't count.
He's playing Mulder.
Yeah.
I mean, he plays Mulder in everything he does until Californication, and then he just plays a skeezball writer.
A.K.A. himself?
He's not a writer. He's just a skeezball.
Wasn't Julian Anderson in that one Todd Solondz movie? I'm kind of looking at you about this, Jeremy. Wasn't she in some, like, big indie film at one point?
She's been in a couple.
House of Mirth? Maybe that was it? I don't know.
I mean, she might have more acting credits, but, like, it's what I know her from. I mean, but people like the cigarette-smoking man, the Lone Gunman did literally nothing else. Frankly, for all I know, they were like, one was a gaffer on the show, and he was just like, you look creepy, you should be in this movie.
Chris Carter didn't do much else either after... X-Files.
Well, nothing successful.
Nothing successful.
I saw that pilot that he directed for Amazon. It was okay.
Oh, there's Millennium and Harsh Realm, and I can't think of anything
else. Both of them were canceled before X-Files ended.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, like, so that means for a while he was essentially all Fox had other than The Simpsons and Futurama. But that... No, not even Futurama, because that started in 2000.
Something like that, yeah.
It had Dark Angel. That was around the same time, I think.
Well, that got canceled after two seasons.
Unfortunately, it's unfortunate. It's a good show.
Well, and James Cameron sucks, so...
Oh, have you guys seen...
Oh, you take that back.
No.
Have you seen Aquarius? That's the new thing. And guess what? Yeah. Mulder plays an FBI agent. Just like he did in Twin Peaks. You know what he did before X-Files? He was the narrator.
Red Shoe Diaries.
He was the narrator on softcore pornography.
And he was also in Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
He was. And he was the transvestite FBI agent on Twin Peaks.
That was legendary right there.
He was so good. I mean, I guess when you're
It tall, rubs the lotion on the skin or gets a UFO again.
No, not quite. If I recall correctly, he was still hitting on Audrey Horne openly while he was wearing a dress.
Because everyone was hitting on Audrey Horne in that
yes,
show.
Yes, indeed. Well, one of the things about The X-Files, though, was I'm surprised it holds up as a movie, okay, but I'm surprised they didn't go all out and make it separate from the TV show. Although I know they did that with the sequel and it didn't work all that well.
Well, I mean, admittedly, unlike the sequel, this one has a grander scale to it. I mean, you've got aliens ripping people apart, spaceships flying out of Antarctica. You know, they hop around the country and other places.
Well, is that stuff you wouldn't have seen on the TV show?
I think they reveal a lot more of the conspiracy in the movie than in the TV show.
Well, and this is an arc, right? Because I forget if it happens between seasons 5 and 6 or 6 and 7, but it fits right into the show. And that's, frankly, all the more impressive in some ways because, as we mentioned earlier, for someone who isn't watching the show, it introduces the characters fairly well and still somehow manages to be an interesting and engaging movie in the midst of, frankly, a lot of gobbledygook. Yeah. You know, I'm a fanboy of the show, and I was nervously looking up around my notes thinking, no one's going to understand what the hell Scully's talking about. Or Mulder looking baffled as he's talking to yet another old man who seems like he knows more than Mulder does. But, you know, people were fairly engaged in this movie because it's, again, it has the, I'm going to say his name wrong. Is it Polkow? The guy who did All the President's Men?
Pakula.
It has that kind of like, there's something bigger here, and if I say it with a straight enough face, you'll assume you understand it. Right? I mean, because that's what it is. It's a lot of backs of cars. It's a lot of dark alleyways. It's a lot of stairwells in anonymous office buildings.
Well, it's very atmospheric, I'll grant you that, but I'm wondering why they didn't go all out and hire someone like Oliver Stone to do this. I mean, he was like the king of conspiracy back then. Wouldn't that have been a great stunt cast? Well, stunt hire right there?
I mean, you could convince me he directed a scene or two. No, I'm not saying, I know that's not what you're saying, but when we get some of these grander scenes, like the scene where Scully's behind the mic in front of a panel of, you know, assistant directors, like that seems like an Oliver Stone's.
Yeah.
However, they clearly wanted to give this a bigger scale for a TV, for the show. So a lot of it still feels like a TV episode until they're running across a glacial shelf that is collapsing underneath them. You know, like the oak paneled room, which, because it's the movie, it's in London instead of just somewhere in a Manhattan penthouse, right?
Yeah.
It's a chamber drama. It's what so much of the show is, you know, and that really feels like a TV show to me.
Well, that's part of the problem, though. I mean, I think that if you're going to make a film out of the material, then you can't really tie it into anything unless pretty much you're offering, well, back in the day, if you were offering like VHS copies of all the episodes of The X-Files as people walked into the theater. I just think I think it holds up very well, and it's definitely engaging, but it didn't separate itself enough to be a movie. It could have been like a two-part summer miniseries or something.
Oh, shit.
I mean, I would say the money's there on the screen. I was thinking to myself, okay, the building explosion at the beginning probably cost at least one episode alone.
That's a good example.
Well, and that's, you know, in some ways, it's a weird scene because it does what a lot of good X-Files episodes do, and a lot of good conspiracy things. I'm going to take it away from the X-Files just to put this in the bigger concept of anti-government sort of conspiracy movies. It seems like it has nothing to do with the rest of the movie when it happens, right? Because they are now just regular FBI agents. They're special agents, and the special agent in command tells them to do something. There's a bomb. Holy crap. It's an interesting thing. It seems like it's unrelated. They tie it back together. But like you said, the year after the Oklahoma City bombing, they blow up half of a building in the middle of Dallas, Texas.
Yep.
And they even make a reference. Of course, it's freaking Dallas. Yeah. That's an incredible shot. Mm-hmm. And the money does end up there. I think it's not only there. I think it's also in the kind of, I mean, that car bomb scene midway through could be in a TV show. The scenes later when they're across, I mean, it's
the X-Files, and it's all the scene probably costs a pretty penny.
It will, and when they're on the Arctic Shelf, which was probably Canada because the show was filmed in Canada at the time.
And oh, yeah. Plus, you've got the critters of the cross between the Greys and Velociraptors,
But the you alien, never see them.
But when they're in that guy's torso, when they're underground,
that was a creepy scene.
And if I may, something we've brought up a lot. It ages well because it's all real effects. Mm-hmm. There was actually some sort of horrible gelatinous dummy that they made with an alien thing in its torso that was wiggling. And when you commence to jiggling, that's terrifying. Like, right? That works. That really
works.
You just
made an Aqua Teen Hunger.
I did. Commence to jiggling. I don't need to sit down. There's several kind of random cold opens to this movie, and it doesn't take long to get to Mulder and Scully, but we get so much exposition from opening scenes. It's actually kind of interesting.
From the grunts to the cavemen all the way.
Yeah. So we get these cavemen trekking across some sort of ice age plane. They fall in a hole. The alien kills them, etc. They get him attacked. And then the next scene, it's in Texas now. Texas is no longer on an Arctic sheet. And so some kids are playing. They fall in the hole. And the kid, what was the movie you said he was from?
I just thought
well, the whole from thing, Sling Blade.
I just thought the whole
Friday Night of, Lights.
The whole thing kind of reminded me of Stand By Me with the kids finding a dead body.
Yeah, and so the kid falls through this hole. He finds the dead body, and
the fossilized remains of a caveman. Let's
he's
be
holding
clear.
Up a skull, which is the coolest thing ever. If you're a kid, the black oil gets into him, and they kind of trump up the special effects from the show. Of course, this is the movie.
That was the least convincing special effect, though, in the movie, where those little alien slugs are crawling through his skin up to his eyeballs. That looks so fake.
It does look good in the eyes, though. When they show the eyes, the smoke going across the eyeballs, that always freaks me out in the show. It works well.
That was part of the show?
Yes, the alien oil is part of the show. And they have an alien virus that goes through the oil. But for those of you who are fanboys out there, it made me wish Alex Krycek showed up. But regardless, the kids get infected. The fire department shows up. Four firemen just disappear. We never see them again, except for one turns to goo later, as I foreshadowed. But this sends us into the plot. I think it's seamless. And if you hadn't seen the show, these are all big enough tropes that you understand that, you know, there's conspiracy. There's people who show up with anonymous, you know, generic trucks that make things go away. They pay the kids off with playground equipment.
And new bicycles.
And new bicycles, which is very super fun to me. You know, Love Canal, where you just, let's put a neighborhood over the toxic waste stuff and move on. Like, it's great. And again, if you're a fanboy and you see the cigarette smoking man for the first time, you're like, he's in the movie. If you're not, and you just see a guy show up in a hazmat suit, take a long draw of a cigarette, and everyone immediately goes to whatever he says, you get the shorthand.
Yeah, well, it's still ominous, yeah. Even if you don't know who it is.
Exactly. That worked very well.
I mean, someone smoking in the 90s, shit, he must be evil. But no, I mean, it's amazing the kind of shorthand they do. And again, it's so much All the President's Men. But at the same time, the fact that none of the guys in suits get names, right? Mm-hmm. And the idea that we call him the cigarette smoking man, obviously he's a guy who smokes cigarettes.
Isn't John Neville's character also credited as like well-dressed man?
The well-dressed man.
Manicured man.
There's a handsome man. There's a well-manicured man. Cigarette smoking man is like Mulder calls him cancer man. They called him the cigarette smoking man because after the pilot aired, that's what the fans were calling him. He never has a name in the scripts. His name is William, so they just write Will's line in the script. That's what's great about it. You don't need to name these characters. It's the ultimate example of show don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Scully's the one who tells everything. She's Miss Exposition. She gets to the bottom of things. It's so cool to see women playing against type.
Well, I would think that, you know, in a show this, or a movie where it has all this, you know, odd goings on, she helps ground it. She's the one who...
Well, she was the protagonist because I have seen the pilot. I've only seen like maybe 5 episodes since it was canceled. What I've seen has been good, but I just haven't seen the whole series. But in the pilot, she was set up as the protagonist. She was the one that was supposed to go down and like rain Fox Mulder in. And she had no idea what the hell he was talking about with all these alien abductions. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nick.
No, you're right.
Right.
Were you saying something, Jim? I'm sorry.
No, I mean, like, just like she's the audience surrogate. She's the one who, you know, we're the ones who are saying, you know, this stuff is ridiculous. But she investigates it and brings reality into it.
And she's so good at it. And like you said, like, I mean, and the whole premise is, for again, for those of you who don't know, but if you're not don't know, you're probably not listening. The premise is that, you know, Mulder is dealing with the X-Files, which are, I say a thing, quote unquote, a thing. The X-Files are files that are unsolved mysteries, right? Like the X is that you've crossed out the number. The case is closed, but not solved. Mm-hmm. So that's something that they used to actually do.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not they're filled with aliens is, of course, no. But the idea here is he's just a nut who became focused on this. He's supposed, because it's supposed to be a Sherlock Holmes and Watson thing, he's a PhD of psychology from Oxford. And she's an MD.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. Yep. That's the Holmes and Watson connection. But of course, it's against type because he's the crazy passionate one and she's the cold analytical scientific one. It's awesome.
This movie technically passes the Bechdel test because you've got two female characters, Scully and the director that's played by Gwyneth Paltrow's mom, talking about something other than men.
Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about their jobs. I mean,
there you go.
Women and their careers. Be making me a cake.
Wow, I think she really was the only other female character in that whole movie.
I don't know. The aliens could have been female.
Yeah, we don't know.
I mean, no, you're right.
The bartender that
Mulder opens
that Mulder
up to.
Like opens up to, that was played by that woman from Dick Tracy.
Something else I love, and this is a fanboy thing I'm going to reference, so I apologize to the rest of my panel, but for your fanboys at home and fangirls, ladies, much like Ross and Rachel, it was a whole will they, won't they with Mulder and Scully. And of course, the whole idea of the show is that they didn't. They were colleagues. They were respected partners. And here they go in for the first kiss of the show, actual first kiss of the show. And she gets stung by a bee and loses consciousness.
Not the bees.
As though his very kiss transmitted something to her. It was great. Like, it was an emotionally charged scene. And I'm just like, mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden,
well, technically something did get inside her shirt in that scene.
Oh, good one.
Hey, now.
I mean, that should be a mic drop and walk away.
Can we talk about Martin Landau's character to complete 180? Because he was like the special guest star of the movie, really. He was the Oscar winner who was playing the character that... the like one-time character that was supposed to spill the beans, but I thought he was kind of overdoing it, especially
how... Oh my god, he was great!
He was great for
the whole point
was
for, you know, Mulder to think that even this guy was crazy, so he had to overdo it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I loved his character type. Well, and we can get into the other part later, but so this guy's named Dr. Kurzweiler, who's an OBGYN, which references something else in the show, which doesn't matter here, and... the whole idea is he knew Mulder's father because apparently everyone knows Mulder's father in this show. And Mulder confirms this later by looking through an old family album
and seeing young Martin Landau
in like a barbecue or something, which is great. Right. But Martin Landau has a side business writing sci-fi books
about
the apocalypse, which is great.
Yeah, he's basically that guy from the movie 2012 who lives in a trailer and claims the world's going to end.
He does. I was also thinking of... someone from Signs or something. Like, anyway, it doesn't matter.
He's the M. Night Shyamalan of this movie?
Yes, he's the M. Night Shyamalan of this movie.
Who insists that the audience will not know what FEMA stands for, like, ever.
And they have to explain every acronym or whatever.
Yep.
Because at the time, FEMA had a good reputation, but conspiracy nuts were still out there, thanks to Alex Jones. What I was going to say is the part that's poignant and has come up more recently... is the child pornography thing. Mm. So when Mulder meets him once in the bar, which is kind of your standard, again, this is a scene right out of All the President's Men. They're meeting in like dark corners and bars.
That's also the best little in joke is Mulder pissing on that poster for Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
It's Chris Carter saying, "I'm the superior alien, dude. Screw you."
Even though part of the scenes near the end looked very familiar.
Mm-hmm.
But Lando, the next scene, Mulder goes to visit him in his apartment, finds the DC police there. And what it's very reminiscent of course, is after the NSA is hacked by Julian Assange, there are rape charges that come out of nowhere about him that are immediately dropped when the woman said, "He didn't rape me." And it's something that's happened before, and whether or not it's true.
So you're saying Bill Cosby didn't do it?
Oh, no. He definitely didn't. Trust me, Bill Cosby is going away for the rest of his very short
life. Now, what I need you to do right now is just keep quiet there, and this will all be over very quickly.
He hasn't been drinking, and that's in the podcast. That's going to be my ringtone.
Oh,
keep
God.
Quiet! That's the silent mode being activated. But no, that's something that does come up now and again, that you can just digital technology. And I think that was, I'm sure it was in the news. It was 96, 97, right? Mm-hmm. Clinton will be arrested. He'll be put on trial the next year.
Yeah. He wasn't even put on trial. They voted him on impeachment and lost.
But he still was on trial before the Senate.
And then he had a civic trial afterwards, and he was disbarred. But regardless, I think it was an interesting character that came up,
right?
And then he knew just enough information to get Mulder interested. Then
I did
put in a trunk.
I did like that line late in the movie where Mulder describes what he found, and the guy's like, "Oh, that makes sense. Like, what, you don't know? I didn't say I had all the answers." That was a good bit.
Well, and the thing, I mean, it's Martin Landau. He can act his way out of probably better movies than this. But they did a really good job of making him look like the well-put-together, conspiracy-minded person. Like, his suit doesn't quite fit. His haircut is a little bit too long, so it looks like he's wearing a weird wig. And he has that well-defined face anyway, so he just looks kind of like he's constantly playing with dentures that he probably didn't have.
And I'm guessing his name being Kurzweil, he was a reference to Ray Kurzweil.
He was. So. I assume so. Like, it's all of this stuff. The more you, like, I'm a conspiracy hobbyist. I don't believe any of this crap, but I'm fascinated by it. And it's amazing how well-researched the X-Files is.
You hurt MJ-12's feelings, Nick. You hurt our feelings. You don't believe in us.
The Majestic.
Who killed JFK, Nick?
Someone in Dallas. They're well-established in Dallas, I hear.
Ah.
Why not? So we didn't do it.
That was so good. I have to, you know, I teach you, I lecture. I am a lecturer at a university on U.S. history. And there's always those kids who believe in conspiracies when we talk about it. And I'm just like, no. Lee Harvey Oswald shot JFK. Although we're getting worse, right? 25% of Americans don't believe he landed on the moon anymore. And so it's kind of nice to actually see a movie that, I'm going to say, pokes fun of it because it's taking itself seriously. It's a movie where conspiracy is treated like fact, but it's making reference to crazier people than they could even.
Well, that's what I think the fascination was with the X-Files, was because after the Soviet Union was defeated, all the spy work that really was going on with the Soviet Union just died off. So it was fun to think about, okay, well, what's this intelligence giant going to do now? And apparently they're going to investigate aliens. It was fun to think about.
Well, and it's just neat because, like you said, when the Soviet Union fell, we realized that a lot of the things we were most worried about were actually the conspiracies were less crazy than the truth. Right? Like, the guy who replaced McCarthy on the American Activities Committee was actually a Soviet spy, according to Kremlin documents. So, like, you know, like, you don't get crazier than that. And so at the end of the day, you're looking at this kind of stuff and you're like, well, I do have a smallpox inoculation scar. Maybe there were aliens involved. My God, you know? And so here when they end up in Antarctica, you're just like, sure, why not? And of course, there's still the comedic note of him tapping the fuel gauge and it dropping to zero and he ending up out of gas in Antarctica. They don't even bother to explain how they survived.
True, yeah.
Right at the spot he needed to be at, though.
Right? Because, like, his GPS ticks, then the last, I guess, three scenes, like, Act 3, Part 2 shows up.
Mm-hmm.
They end up surviving the aliens leaving, and he's just there on the ice with Scully, and... question mark.
Yeah.
Back in DC. Back to you in the studio.
When they clearly did not have the gear they needed to survive in Antarctica.
And people often... Oh, go ahead, Matt.
It didn't even look like Antarctica. I mean, Antarctica is a lot more ugly and desolate, I think.
Mm. Well, it's full of deserts, isn't it?
Isn't it a frozen desert?
Yeah.
Well, and desert. I mean, again, this was Canada. I can virtually guarantee if you look at it, because they were filming at Vancouver at the time. And so if you look at, like, half the cars, they do their best to Greek this, but you'll still see Canadian license plates on things. They didn't move it. They didn't move it until the seventh season because Tia Leone was in Hollywood and Mulder wanted to be near his wife. And scene.
So that's why all the extras look like Terrence and Phillip.
Hey, buddy.
What are you saying, buddy? I'm not your buddy, friend.
Eh? Eh?
We still wanted... I want to do South Park the movie so bad for this. I just rewatched it. It's the best musical ever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sing right now. I want to. I really want to. What else? Well, we kind of should talk a little bit more about...
Well, I've got a question for please. You, Nick, as the fanboy, if I may.
Yeah.
This show lasted for, what, was it 9 seasons?
Something like that.
Where Mulder actually left, like, a little while and then came back for the series finale, mm-hmm. and there was a cliffhanger. Where does the movie really fit into the series? Like, does it propel the series forward, or...?
It does. And I was rewatching it for the show, and so, you know, frankly, for the podcasters, listeners, rather, if you have not been watching the show, this movie is not a bad place to see. You won't know where the show's picking up, but frankly, none of us know where the show's going to pick up. But it does get you into the characters pretty well. Between seasons 6 and 7 or wherever this picks up, I think it's 5 and 6 actually. The important thing is Mulder has once again gone too far at the end of the season. And so they've been back demoted to being regular FBI agents. That's why they're on this, you know, bomb call. One thing they don't really explain is why FBI agents from DC have been flown out for a bomb threat, which possibly will end in a matter of hours. But they don't worry about that, guys. You're thinking too hard. But again, Mulder, you know, Scully's an MD. He's a psychologist. They're agents in the field. Technically, they're special agents under an agent in charge called Mouchot. That part doesn't fit into the bigger plot line. What fits into the bigger plot line are all these various conspiratorial chains. They're worried about Mulder because Mulder is this investigative. Again, he's Woodward and Bernstein. He keeps sticking in their craw. And they're worried that if they pull a Nixon and make them disappear, it will say whatever he was investigating must be the truth because they're willing to make him disappear. So what they keep doing is presenting him with enough truth that he goes too far, embarrasses himself, and backs off. And so where the season has ended, he's gone too far. The X-Files have been closed, so he can't investigate it anymore, and he's been demoted to being a regular field agent. And that's why the movie starts with Scully being so frustrated with the whole thing. She's just going back to being a doctor in private practice. And Mulder wants to investigate on his own.
So that's why they never quite got around to killing him. He was more useful just getting jerked around.
Exactly. And so, like, and then what they're trying their best to control him. And the cigarette-smoking man essentially is a sniper who's been put in charge of dealing with his shenanigans. And so him being Mulder, his dad used to be part of this secret, you know, the Men in Black, the Majestic 12. And then his dad left and started feeding information to Mulder along with a guy called Deep Throat who died. Complete reference to All the President's Men. And and so Mulder now is kind of on his own. And as he gets information and tries to get to the bottom of what the hell's going on, people are willing to throw obstacles in his way, feed him fake information, and so he feels like a man without a country. People are helping him. Skinner, for example, seems to know a little bit more, the bald guy who's their assistant director, but he's really just the next step up the chain. knowing that if he helps Mulder enough, maybe he can prevent Mulder from getting in trouble, but only so far. Like, there's really incredible politics in this show, and you see it here. You know, he's really put before a panel, and who gets the last word? It's not Mulder, it's Scully, mm-hmm. who says, look, we have evidence here, and if you guys try to hide it, you're as at fault. And, you know, the worst part is, it's so insane what they're talking about that regular people don't want to believe them. And so season seven, or the next season, whatever it is, I'm confusing my numbers here, literally starts with them, with the movie as though it was the last episode, as though it was the previous week. That's why I haven't watched past this.
Well, I'll have to check that out.
And I will still say, and I've said this before we watched this for people who weren't as obsessed with the show as I was, the first season is probably one of the best single seasons in a TV show ever. You know, Matt was talking about monsters of the week he remembers. Almost every single one he mentioned was in the first season. And that's nothing against him. When I think of the show, what comes to mind immediately is the first season, which is incredible. Even the one with Tony Shalhoub as a guy who can kill people with his shadow is great, but that's late second season. Like, a lot of the good stuff happens in the first two, and then the guy who creates Breaking Bad comes in the sixth season.
You know, it's so such a shame, because I do know this about the X-Files. During that first season, it was actually led in by one of the most underrated shows of all time, and that's The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. That came on right before the X-Files. That would have been just the best night of TV ever, wouldn't it have been?
It would have been. And frankly, additionally, there was another show, I think, called Abduction, that was all about alien abductions at the time on Fox. And it was atrocious, and it got canceled after a single season. But they essentially said, you can't do a show that's only about alien abduction at the same, you know, on Fox when that's all we have.
Oh, I remember on Fox they used to run all those real or fake specials. And one of them was about, like, the alien autopsy.
I remember that.
Okay. They make fun of it. If you watch enough X-Files, they do a whole episode where they recreate it. And they find, like, a train car where they do these autopsies. I'm fanboying. I'm sorry. I'm not usually this person.
Are you going to squee?
I did twice already in this episode.
Well, it's just amazing how everything on Fox was leading into the X-Files, wasn't it?
And there was a joke on The Simpsons at one point where they have the Simpsons spinoff Spectacular, and they're like, the producers at Fox came to the producers of The Simpsons and asked to fill some gaps in their programming schedule, and it had The Simpsons and X-Files and then question marks for every other time slot.
That's right.
And they were told to come up with 40 new pilots. They came up with 6.
Well, I remember when The X-Files was on Sunday nights, so it was The Simpsons, and then some show that was like doomed to be canceled for a while was The Critic, and then I think it was maybe The PJs at one point. Mm-hmm. I'm probably wrong.
And they went through a series of just garbage animated shows, and then they went through, garbage. Family Guy was there for a couple seasons, and then it was canceled.
Wasn't
too.
King of the Hill at one point there?
Yeah, it was.
But King of the Hill survived for a while, so they moved it before The Simpsons and then tried to slot in other things. Like, for a while, Futurama was there as well. Mm-hmm. And then it became Family Guy and American Dad again. And then there was a bunch of. Well, you mentioned them earlier. X-Files had spinoffs like Millennium, and what was the other one you said?
Harsh Realm.
Both of those were on Fox as well.
Was Sliders on Fox?
I think so.
Okay.
Jerry O'Connell at his finest.
Let's talk about the graveyard of Fox shows.
Well, with all the multiple world stuff, they could have had a Sliders X-Files crossover.
Wasn't Stargate on Fox for a while as well?
Hey, man.
It was on like at midnight.
After midnight, they let it all hang down. The only other guy I kind of want to talk about is the guy who was in charge of the Texas site before everything went down. A guy who looked like McDowell. I thought he looked like...
Oh.
He and Kurzweil looked so much alike. For some reason, for a while, I thought they were the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there was another old guy. He was given a vaccine. He goes out into the hole But it's too late. The guy who, the fireman who'd been infected, apparently the alien had already gestated, and then it turns into a scene from the first Alien movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's just looking around, and the camera's slowly around him on a track, panning around him, and you just hear whispers before he gets brutally mauled on TV. I say TV, it's a movie, but we watched it on TV, so I'm almost there.
Well, that was a great shot, though, when they, like, seal him into the vault after he gets slashed, and he's, like, trying to climb up the ladder with half of his face gone.
And, like, and his, like, he's been disemboweled, and so, like, they cut, like, they show blood coming up him, and he's, like, clawing away. They throw the lid down and just seal him in, like...
And then they cover it over with dirt.
Yeah. And then the dirt sells it. The dirt really sells
it. It does, because he screams once. He's like, no, no, and then there's just a dirt throwing, and you're like...
He's out.
That's a bad day. And I mean, and you know, the director showed restraint, because I half expected Mulder to pick up, like, to tear at the sod that had been thrown down later and just see a hand clawing at the, like,
aww,
like a grave.
Oh, that would have been awful.
But I mean, this movie must have been
the
barely.
The alien was still down there with him. It'd be somebody else's hand.
Whatever. It would have been great. Right? You know, or the scene in Jurassic Park where Laura Dern ends up with Samuel L. Jackson's hand on his shoulder.
Oh.
Like, Mulder sticks his hand down there and sees, like, something reaches down and pulls up a severed hand.
Oh, that would have been bad.
That would have been...
But I mean, yeah, like, thinking about it, with the exception of that scene, and Mulder says shit once, this might be the tamest PG-13... Like,
I don't know. It had a much darker, grittier tone, and I guess that was part of the whole conspiracy thing they were trying to get, where I'm surprised they got away with some of it.
Oh, I'm not arguing with you, but, like, it's all psychological. It's all conspiracy. It's thematic,
true.
Not language or violence. Like, it's a powerful movie for what it is, right? I enjoyed it. I think it's very well directed as well. You know, for a director I didn't know.
Who went on to direct Reign of Fire and Elektra.
Oh.
I liked Reign of Fire.
You
hands
also
off.
Recommended Spawn, Matt. That's going to be my closer to everything you say when it comes to recommending
Teenage
movies.
Mutant Ninja Turtles.
The first two Transformers.
We are almost out of time.
The first Transformers, not Revenge of the...
The second one.
Revenge of the Fallen was the second one. The movie was so disappointing, I wrote a 60,000 fanfic rewrite.
60,000 fanfic?
60,000 word fanfic to show how I would have done it. It was that disappointing.
You know The Great Gatsby was only like 55,000 words, right?
He wrote a Greater Gatsby.
Okay.
Greater Gatsby. West Egg is enough. They decided to annex Long Island. We'll have Greater Gatsby.
I like it. We are just about out of time, though, at least for a myopia episode. Well, you guys, if you haven't been listening to Mission Briefing, you should be, but you know, you could listen to this one three times and not get through Mission Briefing. So we should go around the table and give our final thoughts. We'll start with you, Matt. What did you think?
Boom. I thought it was generally good. Like, the opening scene where the cavemen fight, they're tracking footprints that don't have enough toes, so they were tracking the alien to the cave where they fight it. And that was still great. I remember that from when I saw it in theaters. That's still cool. The whole alien conspiracy thing doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Like, the aliens are... like been messing around the Earth for thousands, if not millions of years. Why don't they just come en masse and take over instead of working through human proxies? You don't do that kind of thing when you're that strong. So I'm wondering, it would probably be better to have...
Why did the aliens and signs visit a planet that was 70% water when that was the thing that could kill
them? It was an alien gang initiation, maybe. So I think it would probably be better if instead of cavemen, there were fur trappers in the 19th century or cowboys. So it shows that the shenanigans have only been going on for not very long
cowboys
historically.
Cowboys versus aliens worked out so
well. Oh, you twisted that knife, didn't you?
I like that so much. I don't know. Well, I'm not going to critique your critique because that's not fair. There's weird, especially since you're right. They talked about it being millions of years ago, and the first scene is 35,000.
I don't think there are even humans in North America in 35,000 years
ago. Oh, there were.
I thought the
land bridge was like 15,000 years ago. We're getting...
No, I think it fell... It doesn't matter. I think it was. But regardless, long story short, Jeremy, what did you think? What were your final thoughts?
As I didn't watch the show that much, I can't say how well it fits into the series. But despite that, I think it works great on its own. I loved it when I saw it in the theaters when it first came out, and I loved it equally now. I think it works great on its own, and I can't speak to people who watch the show, but hopefully they'll like it as well. And yeah, I just think it's great.
Fair enough. Daniel.
I enjoyed it. I really did. It makes me want to check out the show, which I didn't really watch as a kid, and I'm kind of regretting it now. And I guess that's the best thing that it could do, is make me want to check out the source material and see what that was all about. I will say, though, for a movie, though, and you can't really get away with this anymore, it didn't do anything big enough to justify it being a movie, if that makes sense. It could have just been a special extended episode of the TV series. It felt that way. So, I don't know. That'd be my one thing about it, is just it didn't feel quite grand enough to be a film, but that's a kind of a minor thing. It's still very well written, pretty well directed, and it was very entertaining. I liked it.
Thank you. I almost feel like a douche nozzle now, because I was almost going to say the exact opposite, and I. But I was going to say, before Daniel stomped all over my commentary, was actually kind of like the idea that you end up with this huge budget, and I've seen a lot of movies where the idea was clearly small, and then they got a budget, and then they used the money in all the wrong places. And so here I kind of like that they made it still feel kind of intimate at times. You know, like there were so many ways they could have screwed up scenes where Mulder's getting information and given way too big of a shot. You know, the show works because it's a lot of alleyways and backseats of cars and slamming trunks, and they kept that here. You know, yes, there are a few big scenes, blowing up a building, ending up in Antarctica, and the whole alien spaceship at the end is a weird set that I'm sure they had to build, of course, because there's some CGI, but it's for the most part hands-on, very active special effects. It's incredible. And that's where the money went, but they still managed to make it feel within the scope of the show. As the one person here who's, I think, seen every episode, at least once, if not twice, I like this movie because of all those things you guys said. And in fact, in some ways, I like it more. I'm just impressed that it carried over to other people. I was worried that it would be too much of a fanboy thing. I really like this movie. I just am glad it held up to other people. And for fear of prattling on too long, which I've been known to do, I think I'm going to stop it there. I recommend, if you guys happen to listen to us before you watch X-Files, which I doubt, but if you do, watch this movie, especially if you haven't seen the show before, because it will give you a good feeling of the character. If not, the pilot does a good job of it, and a few episodes here or there. But really, it's completely enjoyable. Frankly, I think the thing I'm most interested to see is how they bring it up to the modern era. You know, this movie is predicated a lot of times on not having cameras all the time, and cell phones, and email, and having to do things face to face, which we just don't deal with
it
anymore.
It ends with a telegram.
Which, you know, is one of those things that in my mind I'm so hard trying to justify, and I'm just like, no, there's no good reason anymore.
Yeah. Cut to the cigarette smoking man getting grilled before Congress because someone's cell phone camera was on at just the wrong time.
Yeah, right. Regardless, we are out of time.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.